Welcome, everyone, to our third Founders Lunch in our series of Founders Lunches. Come on in. Plenty of room up front. Lots of room. So we hold these lunches on the third Wednesday of every month, and we've been really, really happy to get some great founders who are willing to come and talk about what they've done and the experience they've had on bringing a product to market and growing customers and really building a high-growth company. So thank you all for coming here. Before we get started and before we start talking here with Mike, I do want to just ask for a raise of hands of how many people have actually been to a Rev1 event before? Quite a few of you. How many of you have never been to a Rev1 event or been in the building before? Well, welcome, and thanks for coming out, especially on a super rainy day. I was kind of wondering how many people will dodge the rain to come out to this today. So thanks for coming out. So at Rev1, we're very, very focused on helping entrepreneurs build great companies in the Columbus region. We put on events like this so that we can help tell the stories of founders and the experiences that they've had building their company. So we provide a combination of services and funding dedicated to helping entrepreneurs grow and build their companies. You've probably noticed a lot of the good kind of buzz happening in our region recently, and that's been a very, very intentional effort to really connect those resources in our region for the benefit of the entrepreneurs. So before we get started and talking to Mike and learning about UpDocs, is that better? Okay, before we do that, I do want to introduce a special guest that we have here today. I want to introduce Colleen Gilger, who heads up economic development for the city of Dublin. We have a microphone for you. I think Charles just took it. I'm going to hand you this. But I did want to give Colleen a minute just to talk about a little bit about some of the resources that are available beyond what's happening in the center of our city, and specifically talking about the resources available up in Dublin, where UpDocs is headquartered.
So, good afternoon. Yes, it's after 12. Like Christy said, I'm with the city of Dublin, and now I'm going to do another show of hands. How many of you have been to the Dublin Entrepreneurial Center? Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, everyone that didn't raise their hand really should come this Thursday. We are launching a new program for all of our entrepreneurs that have moved into the DEC, and it's called our Pathway Program, where similar to some of the programming that Tech Columbus does, all of our tenants now are going to go through a special 3-year process of education to help them get better footing with their startup businesses. Right now, we have about 120 businesses at the DEC. Some of them are virtual, meaning like they only pop in 3 or 4 times a month in their cubicles. Some of them are there in the evenings or the weekends, but we've got a pretty steady flow of about 120. Several are getting ready to graduate, which is really exciting because new spaces will be opening up. We should have about 10 to 11 new offices available probably by early fall. So if you've got an idea, if you need space, we'd love to have you at the Entrepreneurial Center. And we're really proud of UpDocs. You're going to hear some really great things today. Another one of our awesome startup companies that's really had tremendous growth. We're very excited to have them. Hopefully we can continue to be a great place for more to move up to once they graduate and need bigger space. So thanks for having me here. And again, Thursday, we have our Jelly Day at the DEC, which is our big co-working day. But we also have educational events. I believe it starts 10, 11. Okay, 11 on Thursday, Dublin Entrepreneurial Center. Hope to see you there.
Thank you. Thanks, Colleen. So I'm really excited to introduce to you Mike Whitting with UpDocs. He is one of the co-founders and the CTO. So let's welcome Mike.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I think it feels like a good day for you to share some exciting news about that you shared with me when you walked in this morning.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, one of the things we've been really proud about for the last year is our inaugural placement on the Inc. 5000 list. Last year we came in at 524. So Inc. just announced their 2016 list, and turns out we're repeat offenders. So
that's awesome.
You know, we came in the 500s, 571, I believe, this year. So
that's really cool.
Thank you.
Really cool.
Yeah, truly, the credit for that goes to the team. You know, we've got an awesome team. Can't speak enough about them. They're in Dublin, and we're really, really happy and lucky to have them.
And you have about 50 employees now?
50, yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, yep. So before we get into a lot of the questions, so we'll go through some questions that we have prepared, and then About 12:30, we'll open up to the audience, so hold your questions and be thinking about them. But let's start with just, what does UpDocs do? Give us your elevator pitch.
Elevator pitch? Well, our hashtag is where healthcare connects.
Even better.
You probably want more than that, right?
I want more than that. What does that mean? What do you connect?
So UpDocs at its core is really a messaging or a communication engine for people who deliver healthcare. So physicians, pharmacists, patients' families, everybody involved in the delivery of healthcare, UpDocs helps put them together, communicating and getting information back and forth in a secure, timely manner.
Okay. So who then are you selling to directly? Who's your target?
We've got an interesting go-to-market strategy that really created mostly out of necessity, but it turned out to be a really good thing in the long run. Two very different sales channels. So, our initial sales channel, we partner with electronic health record vendors. We've got about 70 partnerships going right now. Our initial partnerships, we didn't have a lot of leverage as a startup in that relationship. So we really took towards a direct, what we now call our direct sales model, which is selling directly to the medical offices, usually practice administrators, practice managers. As we progressed along the, over the past 8 years, we began to partner with more health record software vendors. We added to that the ability for them to sell to their customers direct, sell UpDocs to their customers directly. So we partner, and our direct customer is the EHR software vendor.
Okay, so which came first in this example, the partners with the channels to market, or going directly to the physicians, the practices?
Directly to the physicians, but we still had the EHR as a channel driver. What we presumed to some degree, and this was really validated very early on, is that particularly in the small practice market, the EHR is the main technology investment in the practice office. So really, whatever the EHR does, or what the HR vendor tells the practice or their IT person or whomever, really kind of drives a lot of their purchasing decisions. So that partnership really kind of gained us credibility in the office, as well as the integration, the technical integration with the electronic health record gave us really a competitive advantage.
Okay. So you don't come from the healthcare space at all. So tell us, how did you land here? Where were you before, and what... where was the genesis of UpDocs?
The genesis of UpDocs. I'd say three-fifths of the founder. We had five founders. So I'm going to speak in fifths. Three-fifths of the founders really didn't have a healthcare background. We all came out of a little company that you may know called CheckFree here in town.
We've heard of CheckFree. Biserv
now.
Yeah.
By way of a transportation and logistics company. So a few of us had left for this small company. There were about 11 employees when we started going there. They were embarking on a new, completely new product that was very, very different from their core product. So the team grew, and like I said, three out of five of us were part of this, grew from 11 to about 33 people. So we built a new product. Over the course of, it was probably about 10 months, and we're getting ready to take it to market, and then some of the funding availability changed, and we found ourselves with a lot of free time on our hands.
So you chose in that free time to build a new company.
Yeah, so...
Purposefully at that time, or were you just kind of kicking around ideas, or what did that look like?
Well, no, so when we left, we were looking to acquire the product that we had just built. And we spent, a couple months doing that. And it became apparent kind of over that time that really wasn't a viable option. And at that time, we were meeting pretty regularly, talking about what are we going to do next, how are we going to do it. There are bills to pay. So as somebody who came from a technology background in software development and architecture at that point, I was fortunate to be able to find some companies that happened to be actually in the same building that needed some contracting work.
Okay.
So I could generate a little cash for my family that way,
right.
And as we kind of pursued whatever it was that was going to be next, because it wasn't UpDocs yet. And then one of the founders is actually a practicing neurologist in Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay.
And he had this idea of this I call it hyper connected kind of presence application for medical practitioners.
With their customers?
With their customers, well, with he's a specialist, so you know a lot of his customers are primary care physicians.
Got it. Right.
So he comes at it from a little bit different angle than you know where we've ended up. Although mm-hmm. we do have specialists, and we do you know kind of they use UpDocs in creative ways that we never thought they would to get referrals and do referral management, okay. which is kind of an interesting thing. But he had this idea, and he's a really connected, I mean, like technology connected online kind of guy. So so he just reveled in this availability. You know, people could just send him messages all times in the night. You know,
yeah.
You know, he's the kind of guy who would answer the phone when we call, and he's like, "I'm in a consultation right now. I'm in somebody's brain." You know,
and busy.
Yeah. So yeah. And just always on.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we built.
So he had the idea, and you all started to talk about it. And at what point did you decide we're going to build a business out of this? Or we think we could build a business out of this?
You know, that's one of the reasons he came to us, or that we kind of gelled as a team, was you know, he had the idea. He knew what the product should be, but he had the foresight, or just, you know, maybe the experience to say, I'm not the one to build a business around this. So from day one, mm-hmm. it was really our intention to build a business around this product,
mm-hmm.
or this idea at the time.
And so when you say that, what do you mean by that? Because you had created products before, and you had worked for a startup before. What was different this time?
Yeah. So the last startup that you know I didn't choose to leave, that left me,
right.
was...
That happens, right?
yeah. I mean, in hindsight being 2020, it was the best thing that could have ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I'd say, you know, from the time I was a kid and through college, you know, had always had this kind of entrepreneurial kind of idea rolling around in my head, like, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want to be beholden mm-hmm. to people, which, you know, benefit of adulthood, you find out you're always beholden to somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're an entrepreneur, start your business, it's your customers, and,
yes.
and it's probably more so than anywhere else. You're beholden to them,
right.
or you're,
right.
you know, you're they're kind of calling your destiny. But so we had what I'd call a couple false starts, and kind of looking back on it again with the benefit of hindsight, I'd say what I was really trying to do was just build a job for myself. It wasn't mm-hmm. really building a company
mm-hmm.
per se. So I didn't have any real plans back, you know, in these previous endeavors, really any plans about, you know, how am I going to hire? How am I going to staff? Who are we going to hire? Who's the next hire?
Right.
You know, how are we going to take this product to a larger market? You know, what are our channels? What are our market drivers? How do we, talk about our value proposition to our customers?
Mm-hmm.
Who are our customers? What's our total market? What's our serviceable market? You know, all those kinds
yes.
of things. That really are part and parcel of going from an idea to an operating business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the difference is from
putting
day one
together.
You know, we put together a business plan. We came down Tech Columbus at the time prior to
okay.
the rep.
So
one.
When was that? How long ago was that? That was 2008.
2008.
When you first approached Tech Columbus, the time.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a long time.
It was a while. Well, so you, UpDocs, and you and the founders all talk a lot about the importance of your customers and being close to your customers and creating value for their customers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how that iterated itself or manifested itself, I guess, in the first version of the product. Because what you initially had as an idea is not what you ended up going to market with originally, right?
Correct.
So tell us about that, because that's often a challenge a lot of entrepreneurs have is, I think it should be this, but what really is going to be that first product? How did you navigate that?
It happens much later, right? So, as I mentioned, we had one neurologist vision of what this product should be. And it turns out, yeah, he's a very forward-thinking guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a blessing and a little bit of a curse too, because he was way out ahead of the curve of what
5 years ahead of where you'd be.
At least. Where I think the market as a whole is or was. You know, his perfect day is, you know, I can be interrupted by somebody chatting me at any moment, no matter what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so he's, you know, a little bit less than representative.
Just hyper connected.
Right. So and that's kind of what we built initially. You know, and there were a bunch of features we built that we saw as peripheral, but sort of supportive mm-hmm. of this their workday.
You thought that it was important to have all of those.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily even really central to the product. Like I said, it was really pretty peripheral. But we thought, well, doctors are in here. For example, doctors do a lot of faxing, right? And I don't know if you know this, it's insane the amount of faxing they do.
Still.
You know, still 2016, faxing. The average provider, so if you have three doctors in a practice, they'll do, on average, about 3,000 to 3,300 pages of faxing.
Who are they faxing? That's a lot of faxes.
It's about 80-20 receiving faxes.
Okay.
And typically it's from hospitals, lab results, it's getting, certainly that's an area that's getting better with electronic interfaces okay. for lab results and things like that, but very, very much still fax-driven, information flows. Mm-hmm. So we built the ability to fax into our product just because it seemed like an interesting thing to do. It's something they do a lot. We figured it would be useful. In our first release of the product, we found that nobody wanted to be hyper-connected, but they all needed to fax.
Yep.
So we dug a little bit deeper. We said, well, in the current, in our initial customer base, which was maybe at that time 50 or 60 offices, we said, what electronic health record system do you have? And this is 8 years ago, so a lot mm-hmm. of them said none. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them had a particular EHR. And we said, well, let's build an integration to that.
Okay.
So you can fax in and out, and you can put it right into a patient's chart. So he said, we'll get all your patients out. As you get a fax in, you can split it up, because that's another thing. As we went from, doctors were telling us, as we went from paper charts to an electronic chart, paper faxes and paper charts have nice parity, right? You mm-hmm. can get a paper fax off the fax machine. A lot of times if it's from a hospital and it's lab results, there's results for five different patients. Mm-hmm. You can take a couple couple pages, put it in one manila folder. You can take a couple other pages, put it in another manila folder.
Still works. Yep.
Still works. So you go to an electronic health record, which was kind of up and coming at that time, and certainly the EHR penetration now is through the roof. That didn't work so well. They had to scan and dubious import capabilities into these various electronic health record applications. So we said, well, let's build an integration that largely does that. So you get a fax in, you can split it up, you can combine them, you can route them around your office, you can annotate them, get it into the patient's chart. And we found that these offices were really hungry for this type of a workflow application, and fax happened to be a big driver.
Mm-hmm. So that was the first iteration that really started getting interest from customers.
Yeah, that one really, for lack of a better word, resonated with customers.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of great feedback, and then they started talking to us about, well, what if it did this? Could you do this? Could you do this? And that's where we really kind of realized that we might be onto something.
Okay, right.
From a product perspective.
Yeah.
And one of those, the next one of those things was, well, how do we get how do you get these lab results? Because that was a common case. How do you get these lab results to your patients when they need to see them? They're like, well, we mail them,
mm-hmm.
or they come in and get them. I thought, well, that seems like a waste of money and time. So 8 years ago, there was no such thing as patient portal. There was no driver for patient portals like there is today.
Right.
Now there's a regulatory environment that really kind of drives mm-hmm. the use and adoption of patient portals. So 8 years ago, or 7 years ago, I guess it would be, we built a patient portal.
Okay. And, it was a little ahead of its time.
It was, on the one hand. We found a specific need out of their, when we look at the patient portal, we look at all the things it could be, right? It could be scheduling, it could be notifications and reminders, it could be your total health record, mm-hmm. like a PHR. Everybody's seen Google and Microsoft go through their personal health record applications, and they pulled the plug, at least Google did. So we said, here's one very specific thing we can do. We can deliver results to your patients. We can deliver lab results, and if you need to send a message to them, you can send a message securely. You don't have to worry about HIPAA. You don't have to worry about sending email.
Mm-hmm.
And we, being the folks at UpDocs, thought, well, wouldn't it be great if your patients could send you messages, if they could fill out forms online, if they could do all these other things, and that, by and large, terrified our practices. They felt that, and rightly so, that they're overworked, that this is going to be just a flood of information. We don't know how we're going to deal with this. We can't deal with all the information we have. You want to mm-hmm. get people just emailing us? This is how they thought of it, at all times of the night. So we gave them the ability to just selectively, when they were ready, enable those features.
Okay.
And that was really kind of when things took off mm-hmm. from that perspective. They tried it, realized it wasn't so scary. A lot of times it took, you know, somebody who would come in and they realized, okay, somebody coming in the office is you know, from the business of a practice perspective, you know, there's the human side where it's great to have somebody come in. But from the business side of a medical practice, that takes a lot more time than somebody sending a message in, and they have to deal with that right then, no matter what they're doing. You
know? Right.
You take the kind of the asynchronous communication that's made email so mm-hmm. so popular and apply it to a whole other market.
Yep. So switching gears a little bit, talking about that aspect of building the business and the product being one piece of that. What would you say is one or maybe two of the key things that you've learned over the course of the last 8 or so years around other aspects of building the business? Things that you wish you would have known earlier on around the team or around the iteration of the product with customers, or what are things that stand out to you?
I think one of the big things is, you know, in terms of building the team, you know, good people are very hard to find. You know, we're fortunate, and what we did was just to, you know, what I think most people would do, we tapped our kind of our personal networks, mm-hmm. Found that a lot of our friends didn't necessarily want to work for an unproven startup, but
why? You know,
but some did, and those that's you know kind of built the core of the team.
Okay.
And you know, barring direct you know hiring of friends, when I say don't you know coworkers probably more so than friends. Were referrals from those folks, so kind of that second level out of, mm-hmm. you know, I know somebody, I'm willing to stand up and vouch for this person, and,
right.
You know, kind of built the team out that way.
So tell us a little bit about the iteration of the product over time and how you go about keeping the customer's needs front and center. I know a lot of companies don't have access to so many transactions that they can let the data lead them to what should be coming and where the usage is highest, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what has been your experience in how to keep the customer always front of mind in the development of the product?
Yeah, that's great. And because we have the two different kind of customers, where one is a software company and the other is the medical practice, we're really able to, I think, take our experience and interaction with the customers who are our direct customers. That's where we're working directly with the physicians and the office staff, and extrapolate that across the ones where we're not. And at this point, you know, the majority of our customers are this indirect relationship, so we don't have direct access to them. But we found that you know that the customers we do have direct access to and that we do sell to directly are representative enough that we can take our experience with them, and it's actually kind of a value prop that we can give to the EHR software vendors,
mm-hmm.
because EHR vendors are typically focused on and good at the clinical workflows, you know, which is what the EHR does. It handles clinical data. And what we do is really handle more of the administrative data,
mm-hmm.
so and handle administrative workflows. So you think of it as, you know, in a lot of our practices, the doctors are in the HR. Almost everybody else is in UpDocs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of the billing folks, the front desk people. You know, they're the ones working in UpDocs, kind of getting information in and out, getting information to patients, handling billing questions. You know, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
Right.
So the HR vendors really aren't focused in on those workflows, and in a lot of cases, not really expert in those workflows, and that's where we can really kind of bring some value mm-hmm. to them, and as well as take away the burden of implementing a lot of that.
Right, right. So when you look at, I want to make sure I leave plenty of time for questions. When you look at the aspect of the company when it first started and the company as it is now with 50 employees, I'm assuming the day-to-day work life and the day-to-day, you know, even working among the team has changed significantly over time. So, but you've talked also to me offline about just the importance of the culture and mm-hmm. the being very deliberate about the culture. So talk to us a little bit about how you as a founding team thought about your culture and how you've been able to or have been focused on, you know, maintaining and growing that, certain aspects of it that you think are important.
Sure. Yeah, when, you know, culture was something we really thought about from the very beginning, which sounds kind of funny. It was one of the things I didn't really expect to think about a lot when we were talking about starting a business and making
Well, what made you think about it? Why did you feel like you had to think about it?
The biggest driver and the biggest, I think the biggest aspect of our early culture was, you know, kind of having the experience we had where one day we walked in and, and folk, you know, somebody said to us, hey, you know, the product you were working on, you're not working on it anymore. And, you know, the company you work for, you're not working for it anymore. We said, well, you know, we want to, we don't know if we'll be successful or not. You know, the odds are actually against us, but if we're not, we want to see it coming. So that, and that's something we create, you know, this is just an example, but this is one of the things from the get-go. We said, well, we want to know what our daily billing is every day. And of course we knew it, but we want everybody in the company to know it. So, you know, there's an internal website where everybody can go. They can see, you know, what we build that, you know, that day, what we build for the last, that day, last month, that day, the month before.
When you say they can see, they can see like
they can see a
product
graph.
Features or use, usage?
Usage, okay. Actual, you know, here's the dollar amount that, that we build today and see it graphed over time. So, you know, I think we all, we all went out and celebrated when we had our first $1,000 day. I think, you know, that was pretty amazing for us. And then, you know, a couple, maybe a little too long later, you know, when we had our $1,000 days across the board.
Right.
So it was really for us, it was fun to watch it grow over time. And I think for everybody who came on, and this is true of, you know, the 50th person as well as the first, you know, they can go there, they can see that information, and that's grown over time. We can see the customers. So we can see, you know, they can see a graph over time of when we hit 40 million patients in our database, when we hit, you know, 45, when we hit 50, and you can watch it just kind of, you know, hockey stick.
Stick. Well, good. So I'll ask one more question, and then we'll turn it over to the audience. I'm sure you guys have a lot of things you want to ask, Mike. But from the perspective of, you know, the resources that you, it sounds like you knew where you had gaps, even among the five founders or the five that were co-founding, and you were looking for places to get those resources. I mean, what, I guess what made you, was it Columbus was home? Is that why you picked Columbus? And then obviously then Dublin, you know, why here for, you know, building the type of company that you knew you could build anywhere?
Yeah, so, so in, initially Columbus was home, so it was the logical place to start. And then a funny thing, and to me an unexpected thing, happened as, you know, over the first couple years and continues to this day, is that, that, you know, as we talk to the financial community, as we talk to maybe hires that are, you know, they're coastal, you know, when we talk about the business and we talk about what we're doing and how we're approaching it here in Columbus, there were, this happened time and time again where they say, you know, we love that you have, for whatever this means, you know, I think we've figured it out since then, we have Midwest values. You know, you're building a company that has real real value. You're building recurring revenue, you're building solidly, you're building not necessarily conservatively, but not irresponsibly is the wrong word, but, you know, you're not really, you know, just taking $100 million and seeing what sticks.
More intentional.
It's more intentional. We, you know, every step along the way, we want to build and demonstrate demonstrate value and demonstrate it in the form of revenue.
Right, right. That's a good thing. I lied. I have one more question. I could go on and on. You know, one thing I think that we see as challenges in working with so many entrepreneurs on a daily basis is that they have a hard time sometimes overcoming being the startup in that selling cycle. So when you look back at, as you're knocking down doors within the physicians and even with the channel partners who have not heard of you or your company, what were, what are some of the ways that you overcame being the startup selling to non-startups?
You know, early on, I think We sought out, or partnership sought out us, where there was a natural hunger or maybe a natural propensity to take some risk from the partner's perspective. I think as that you know that was fairly early on. As time grew or as time went on, the ability to really clearly and cleanly demonstrate the value of what we were doing and do it in a way that was not threatening to their business, because it's an interesting sort of in some cases, you know, co-opetition, where there is some overlap with what the EHRs do, but we've kind of framed it up in a way where we say, okay, you know, we like to fill in gaps, we like to augment, we like to you know, complement the EHR. So don't worry about the things you do. You do the things you do, and, mm-hmm. and we'll fill in the gaps where you aren't. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
I know. I think that one of the things you said there in the beginning was you're finding people who are willing to take risks, and mm-hmm. that's what we've seen as well, is you're looking for those early adopters who are willing and are interested in overcoming a challenge versus I'm kind of maintaining what I'm doing and keeping it.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, that we really tried to do is kind of remove the risk on their part. So we did a lot of the work, or did all the work, you know, to the extent that we could, you know, in terms of these integrations. And that's mm-hmm. really where the partnership, there's the business relationship of the partnership, and that's where a lot of the kind of mitigating perceived or real threats to competition. But then from a technical perspective, we say, well, you know, we can do this work. We're, you know, you give us an API, or you know, give us some way to get into your system. You give us database access, we'll connect into it, we'll mm-hmm. do the work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that took away, I think, a lot of the risk of them partnering with us. They didn't really have a lot of, you know, skin in the game.
Right. They weren't making their life difficult before it got better. Right.
Right. And then, you know, then they'd start to hear from their customers about, you know, how much they really enjoyed using UpDocs and how much it helped them throughout their day. Then, you know, really kind of took on a real partnership where, you know, we'd field questions that were really EHR questions,
okay.
but we'd taken enough of them that we knew how to solve the problems. So
right.
we viewed the customer really from viewed the relationship from the customer's perspective, and, you know, we were from the customer's perspective, we were kind of one entity, so
mm-hmm.
we tried to treat them that way.
Yes. So let's open it up to questions from the audience. I think Charles has a microphone back here in the gray. Any questions?
On the technology side, you've identified a gap in the space,
mm-hmm.
and there's lots of other technology around you, bigger players. The bigger you get, the more attention you draw to yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think about the risk of other players in the space that could, bigger companies that could just do what you do, kind of competing with you? How do you think about that from a technical perspective?
Sure. Part of it is a technical perspective. You know, the integrations that we've done are part of it, but, you know, integrations can be reproduced. That's not a silver bullet to raise the bar for competition or raise it that much that they can't come in. A lot of what I think it really comes from the business side or from the user experience side, where, you know, we look at the customers in the office, they're using an EHR. They may be using a practice management system to handle their financial aspects. We feel like there's probably room for one other application. You know, beyond that, people start to just ignore it, not log in, do that sort of thing. So what we've done is try to build and draw on features that, when taken as a whole, really represent the majority of what the administrative staff in the office needs to do. So by that I mean, faxing was the initial one. This patient portal was second. We've taken kind of that communication platform and built on top of it things like scheduling and reminders and patient purchases and payments, and tried to kind of create a well-rounded suite of tools where we, for lack of a better word, you know, somebody's not going to go out and hopefully use another app in addition to ours. So we become the third leg of the tripod, I guess.
First, thank you to the moderator for some very good questions, especially the last three were quite good. Thank you.
Got some others in
there. This is a question about the curse of success. So now you've got a product and it looks like it works. Tell me about building out the customer-facing portion of your company.
Customer-facing in terms of technically?
No. So what's throttling your growth right now? Do you have the right service people? Do you have people to answer questions on the phone, go out and do the shoe leather work?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the very last part.
Do you have people running around and talking to customers face-to-face? Do you have service people answering questions on the phone, support folks? Tell me about building that portion of your company.
Sure. We do have a support team. We would call our customer experience team, which encompasses technical support as well as things like onboarding training. You know, we kind of package that all up as one team within UpDocs. We don't have folks out in the field. Again, kind of coming back to what we feel or what we found the drivers to purchase being in our target market. it's really the partnerships with the health record vendors that kind of pull us into the offices. So we don't really have to spend and probably would not be well served by putting folks out in the field facing customers.
Other questions? While you're thinking about it real quick, just tell us a little bit about what's next for UpDocs. So you had a big news today, and I feel like I'm constantly getting the updates from you guys on new partnership, new product, new distribution channel. What's the big trend, or what's next in the next 3 or 4 years?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we talk about this a lot, not surprisingly. And we talk about it in terms of, you know, horizontal market and in terms of, you know, kind of vertical product. Horizontally, you know, we found our start and really kind of the bulk of our growth in the ambulatory care space. So just, you know, regular primary care physicians and specialists. Dental kind of came along through a big partnership. Through other partnerships, we're getting recently into the pharmacy and particularly independent pharmacy market.
That was a fun noise. I thought one of my kids snuck in the room somehow.
And then there's a couple others, but, you know, post-acute care, long-term care, you know, those are some areas that we're looking to grow into.
So industries, growing into different industries.
Yeah, different aspects of health.
Aspects of the same industry.
Yes, yes. And we found, you know, we found this just through analyzing the market ourselves, but we've also found that through ways our customers are using the product. Early stages and to some degree still have the ability, it's kind of a toolkit, right? And customers are free to and do use it in unique and interesting ways that they've kind of invented on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So, part of that is finding new markets. The other part of that gives us a lot of data as to how to proceed from a vertical standpoint, how we're going to build out the product and build out new features. And, we're seeing a lot of interest in kind of in referral management, coordination of care, and those types of things that are taking the platform, taking the fundamental ability to connect across all these different components or different people who have a hand in the in delivering healthcare and delivering even a higher order of value for them.
You mentioned the transparency piece of the culture that you've built in your organization.
Yes.
We're in the process of building the organization out as well, and I think that culture piece is the key to energy, success within the organization internally. Can you just touch a little bit more on the decisions that you've made to do that and how that's affected your culture within the organization and what type of levels of energy that you have amongst your internal resources?
Sure. You know, that was but one, but it's a good, you know, the financial transparency was one of the first, and because when you have a small team, you tend to work, and we had worked together for anywhere from 5 to 10 years, we had a pretty good working relationship, it came fairly naturally. But over time, we actually talked about and tried to extract, like, what is it about our working relationship that makes it work? What makes it fun? We take that and really intentionally talk about that when we were building the team out as part of the hiring process. So what we found, I'm not super proud of this, but, you know, we all have fairly juvenile senses of humor. that makes it fun. So, you know, we wouldn't hire somebody solely because they had a juvenile sense of humor, kind of quite the opposite.
But it ranks high on the list, right?
But, you know, all other things being equal, that's something we talk about in terms of, you know, what is going to make somebody happy at UpDocs, and kind of try and frame it in those terms. You know, early on we did, still try to the extent we can, but as we grow, this gets a little bit harder. New candidates, every candidate would go out, we'd take them out to lunch, and, you know, the whole team would take them out to lunch. My particular area of responsibility now being the development organization, when we hire new devs, still try to take candidates out for lunch, or at least before we hire them, take them out to lunch and get the team involved. If not the first, the second meeting we have with a candidate, they're meeting with other devs and talking about what a day looks like, not just selling it, really talking about, you know, the warts and all of what a day at UpDocs is like. And I've heard it, and they'll do it in front of me and anybody else who's, you know, they feel comfortable. that's another aspect of the culture is just, you know, say what you think, very, very sort of low filter. And if the truth hurts, it hurts, but, you know, it's at least it's out there. So, you know, like I said, part of hiring, definitely we need people who fit the bill and can, you know, have the skills to do what we need them to do. But an equally important aspect is somebody who's going to be happy, who's going to be successful, who's going to enjoy the environment and take it from there.
Mike, hey, I really admired your perseverance.
Yeah.
Your hair today is a success story. Early on, before you had clients, before you had a product, mm-hmm. you had a concept and business plan, well received, funded, but there you didn't meet a lot of the early milestones, right?
Yeah.
Take us back to that.
Don't remind him about that.
How did you work through that? And then what advice do you give the entrepreneurs here that might find themselves in?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely wasn't the smoothest start. And if I had a dollar for everything that went right, I'd have 50 cents maybe. You know, I think the biggest thing was looking at what could be objectively viewed as failure. You know, we built a product. We spent a decent amount of time building a product. We threw it out there, and we got a lot of critical feedback. And by critical feedback, I mean people didn't like it.
Nobody wanted to buy it.
Yeah, or they were reluctantly buy it and ask us why we had inflicted this on them. But you know, and again, it's kind of this, you know, coming back to low to no filter. If the truth hurts, so be it. Let's take it as a learning experience. Not have a whole lot of ego involved, and take what we can learn from it. And that's where we fairly quickly. In maybe not quickly enough in looking back on it, but discovered that this peripheral feature being faxing was a big driver for our offices. So from that point on, we started to look to our customers to drive a lot of our decision making. Certainly not unchecked, but to listen and kind of take their advice and hear them and try to remove sort of our filter. We saw success, and then. A little bit later on, you know, we were keeping track of the regulatory environment, and that's where things like meaningful use came along, and prescribed that the health record, you know, EHRs had to have secure messaging, and we're like, hey, we can do that, and they had to have a patient portal. We're like, hey, what do you know? We have a patient portal, and so part of it is sticking around and watching the environment and taking advantage of the opportunities that present themselves that are near and dear to your product. They might not be there already, but we found a very short path from what we had to what we needed to satisfy some of those new emerging markets.
I was just curious if you could take us back within the sales process, and you know, it sounded like as you were describing your two different sales channels that. Mm-hmm. You started with the direct, which I think is pretty typical of a lot of startups, because you have to go to the end user and convince them that there's value there in order to explain that value to an indirect partner,
right.
and really build the confidence that you're delivering that value for customers that they can talk to. I was just curious, you know, I think that it's a challenge a lot of startups face when they start to try to make the transition to a distribution model that's indirect. Mm-hmm. You know, could you maybe take us back to what was the first domino, if you would, in terms of that, and what did that look like for you, and how clear cut was it in terms of making that transition, since it makes up such a large portion of your customer base now?
Yeah, the direct sales model, we lived in that world for a couple years, and so we really didn't try to push it. We more let it happen, and I don't know if that's a good answer for everybody. It happened to work for us. So what we could do is, as we went, as time went on, and we did try it, and with varying degrees of early success. So it's not a clear, it's definitely not a clear cut. December 31st, 2012, we suddenly were able to achieve the indirect partnerships. There is really a continuum of direct versus indirect, where we started asking our partners to give us sales leads, We asked our partners to, when they were selling, you know, and this was a time where there were still a lot of net new EHR sales. You know, and that market has slowed down considerably. But we said, just, you know, pull us along. You know, as your reps are talking, your sales reps are talking to your prospects, just mention UpDocs. And even if it's just to hand them off to our sales folks. And then, you know, there was a gradual kind of building of trust when they saw that we could service their customers in a way that would, you know, make them happy. And in a lot of cases, as I mentioned before, if we've had partnerships kind of move from direct to indirect, or maybe not so much the whole partnership, but maybe aspects of the partnership. They might use us for faxing in a direct model, but then they've come along and we've done secure encrypted email, and they'll private label that as they gain confidence in us as a partner. So just being open to the all the shapes and forms of partnership has really kind of gone a long way.
So coming out of CheckFree, how hard was it to make the transition to the regulatory environment of healthcare, and is that getting harder? Like, how much of your staff time now is just keeping track of regulations and compliance?
So coming out of CheckFree, yeah, it definitely is a different world, and it's definitely a different world now than it was 8 years ago when we started. Both because the regulatory environment has changed, and because our product has grown into a more highly regulated product. So the answer is yes, it's definitely gotten harder. We have, if I had to total it up, you know, probably three people focused almost full time. We have fortunate, one of our relatively early hires is a regulation enthusiast, I guess is the best way to think of it, which is a pretty rare quality, right? So she's amazing. I mean, she can digest, you know, she'll go home one night and go, you know, I've got to read this 172 pages of new regulations, and she'll come back with a nice summary for everybody, you know, the next day. And so fortunately, you know, none of us have to.
It's a good person to have on staff.
But yeah, it's and it's one of the areas that kind of, you know, coming back to the question earlier about differentiate, you know, about kind of staving off competition from a technology perspective. One of our big accreditations is called ENAC, and that is required for us to participate in a federally sort of mandated, meaningful use, secure encrypted email technology, right? So achieving that is non-trivial, and that's kind of one of the things that I think is both a sales tool, and it also kind of helps kind of fend off some potential competitors in that area.
One of the challenges for someone starting out is how do you get partners and how do you get employees that you really can use? There was an indication, I think Greg said, you had some funding initially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there was money. So if he wanted to hire someone, you could at least give him a minimum wage. And if not, how did you convince somebody to go without money for a year?
Well, the only people we really convinced to go out without money for any significant length of time was ourselves. We took fortunate to get some pre-revenue funding from at the time Tech Columbus, Rev1. And unfortunately used a lot of that to kind of figure out some of our product decisions. So not a lot of that went towards actual hiring. Kind of coming back to one of the things that we got feedback from on our value and building, a Midwest value, kind of, you know, generating revenue company, is that we could take that along with some angel investment and really kind of get the team kicked off.
Done? Yeah, now we go. Okay. Mine's more workforce related. Are you able to fill positions easily with people from Central Ohio? If not, how are you recruiting? And are you finding any skills gaps? And what could local educational institutions be doing to make things better for you and companies like you?
That's a great question. And then there's sort of a lot of aspects to the answer. You know, I'll speak primarily from a technology perspective, because that's really where most of my experience is. We really kind of set the expectation and that early on that We were building a local team. We didn't want to have a highly distributed, kind of virtual team. There are a couple folks, particularly in sales who have who are remote and for whatever reason, because they were a good strategic hire. They didn't want to move, whatever. But by and large, we've sourced from Central Ohio. We find the candidates. There are the candidates. We're convinced of this. We know this because we found them. It's a little bit challenging to get them to us, right? And this is changing a little bit. We've got a little bit more name recognition than we did a couple years ago. It was really hard, 4 or 5 years ago. People would, Cox, who, what? What's this place? And now there's a little bit of name recognition. So there's a lot of local firms that we've worked with, and we really value them for as much as who they bring and as who they don't bring. And there was one that was just kind of who was our next door neighbor in one of our other offices who had a candidate lined up, and they were going to bring them in, and they said. They called us up and they're like, "Oh, whatever it was, 3 o'clock candidate. We're not going to bring him over." And we said, "Okay." And they're like, "He's asleep in our office. he's on the front bench." So there's a lot of value there. But so maybe awake is a skill gap. I don't know. And we've talked to a number of the educational. Institutions here in Central Ohio about the types of candidates that we're seeing. A lot of positive feedback. There's not really a ton that we could say where we're like, "Oh, here's clearly a there's a huge skill gap in whatever area." It's more of an individual thing. So yeah, they're here. They're definitely here. There's a lot of competition for them, which is the bigger challenge.
Well, good. Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Mike, for coming today.
Thanks.
If I can get you to hold just for 1 minute, we have a couple of announcements that I want you to miss. And Mike will be available for probably 5 to 10 minutes if you have a few other questions, and then he's got to run off to Dublin. So thanks again, everyone.
Let's give it up one more time for Mike and Christy.
Thank you.
My name is Charles Hill. I'm the Director of Community Outreach here at RevOne. I know you're all busy, so we're going to get you out to your busy afternoons real quick. Just a couple things I wanted to mention real quick. One, I hope you're taking notes of these things. This is our third one that we've done, the Founders Day lunch that we have here, and we're doing it for you, the entrepreneur, to help you out to build great companies. We did one the first time with MentorClick. We had CropZilla, and then we had UpDocs. We have one next month. We'll be on September 20th, so be right back here. So I know you're enjoying the good food that we're providing. But hopefully you're soaking up the information that we're giving you, the entrepreneur. So 3 quick things, just real quick. Thursday, tomorrow, we have my colleague Matt Verizer right here in the room. He will be at the Dublin DEC that Colleen mentioned earlier. We call it the Dublin Entrepreneurial Center up in Dublin. He'll be speaking on what customers want. It'll be a great opportunity for you, the entrepreneur, again, to hear from his perspective and pick his brain about some things of what customers want. We have on Friday our Tiger Talk up at Innovate up in New Albany. So we'll be up there, and we have our colleague Parker here. We'll be talking about angel investors and stuff like that. So that'd be a great opportunity on Friday. And then everybody on your seat, you have our big event coming up on September 20th, Demo Day. Demo Day is a great opportunity for you, the entrepreneur, if you're a new entrepreneur or founding entrepreneur, if you're a consumer and you're interested in the great startups. It's a great opportunity for you to come hear some of the pitches, things that are going on. That, again, it will be on September 20th. All the information is on our website at RevOne. You can go there and click under events. You can register for any of those events that we got right there. We implore you to come and implore you to pick the entrepreneur's brains here. So it's a great opportunity for you all. And the last thing, too, real quick, raise of hands, all first-time guests who's been here, first time in the building, if you want to do a tour of this wonderful facility and see some of the businesses that we have here, I'll be leading the tour here as soon as we wrap up. If you just want to meet me out, right here in the Concord, and then we'll do a little tour if you want to. If you got to get back out to your day, we totally understand. We appreciate your support. We hope to see you next month, and have a wonderful afternoon. All right.